Happy New Year to everyone listening. It is January the 2nd. This is Kathy bringing you the News Gazette. Front page, winners and losers for new state laws. By now, we trust you've heard that the Mahomet Aquifer is officially off limits to carbon sequestration activity. Illinois gun owners have new safety rules to abide by, and the land of Lincoln is among 12 states that allow terminally ill patients access to life-ending medication prescribed by a physician. But those are just a few of the hundreds of new laws taking effect in 2026. Here's an overview of 20-plus others, winners and losers style, from editor Jeff D'Alessio. Winner, retired police canines. Four-legged officers no longer on the job will get the care they deserve courtesy of House Bill 3140, which reimburses handlers for up to $1,500 in veterinary care per year per pooch. To qualify, dogs must have put in 5 years of service or 3 years if they were injured while on duty. New losers, squatters. No longer is a court order eviction needed for police to remove trespassers who are illegally staying at someone else's residence. State Bill 1563 amends the Code of Civil Procedure to deal with what the Illinois Realtors Association called the state's growing squatter issue. Winner. Drivers in their late 70s, House Bill 1226, requires seniors over 79, not the previous 75, to renew their driver's licenses in person. And just those 87 and up must take an annual driving test. Seniors between the ages of 79 and 86 now need to only take a vision test, and if they have a driving violation, a written exam. Worth noting, in 2023, the crash rate for motorists 79 and older was 24.6 per 1,000 drivers, the lowest of any age group, according to the Illinois Department of Transportation data. Loser. Law enforcement officers with checkered pasts, a bill inspired by former Sangamon County Sheriff's Deputy Sean Grayson, who was convicted of second-degree murder in the fatal shooting of Sonya Massey, requires law enforcement agencies to conduct extensive background checks of officers before making job offers. Winner, organ donors. It's no longer just full-timers who are allowed up to 10 days of leave in a 12-month period to serve as donors. The law has been expanded to include part-time employees of local governments and private companies with more than 50 staffers. Loser, whomever gets stuck with having to deliver this news to patients. Under House Bill 1431, hospitals are now required to inform patients up front whether they will be charged a facility fee for outpatient services on top of the regular professional fee. Loser, manufacturers of many plastic bottles of soap, shampoo, and conditioner. Winner, celiacs. When they dine out at any establishment statewide, they'll now know that everyone in the restaurant has been trained on the safe handling of gluten-free foods. Senate Bill 1288 makes that mandatory, adds sesame as a major allergen, and requires of food handlers a better understanding of gluten-related risks. Illinois' hospitality industry will need far fewer four-quart containers for personal care products, which are now barred from all hotels unless the guest specifically asks for one. A first offense will result in a warning, number two, and beyond could mean fines of up to $1,500 for each violation. Winner, the soybean, along with an official pie, pumpkin, snack, popcorn, and reptile, painted turtle, the land of Lincoln now has an official state bean, per House Bill 4439. Loser, short-staffed assisted living facilities and nursing homes. HB 2336 allows municipalities and fire protection districts to begin charging a reasonable fee for non-emergency calls to help lift residents after the sixth response in a year. The Illinois Municipal League backed the bill, arguing that calls to fire departments for such services are a burden on local governments and shift liabilities for any injuries suffered during the process to fire departments rather than the assisted living facilities and the nursing home. Winner, Hindus. That's who State Senator Laura Ellman, Democrat of Naperville, had in mind when she proposed Senate Bill 1793, which amends Illinois' Crematory Regulation Act to allow for those wishing to have their ashes scattered in water for religious reasons to do so. All Illinois rivers are fair game, so long as the remains are limited to the ashes of one person, are spread over a large enough area to avoid the ashes accumulating, are scattered away from public areas, including walkways, roads, trails, picnic areas, campgrounds, and parking lots, and are just ashes, no body prostheses or artificial organs. Loser, shady gym owners. A bill backed by State Senator Christopher Belt takes aim at what the Swansea Democrat calls straight-up scams used by the fitness industry, targeting a lifetime membership 1 year, then jacking up the rate a year later. The law says if they're going to advertise this way, it can't be hidden behind a 10-page size 2-font contract that auto renews with a price increase. Winner, bars and restaurants that serve booze. The status of a law popularized during the pandemic, offering cocktails for delivery and curbside pickup, has been changed from temporary to permanent. Loser, aggressive debt collectors, now off limits from seizure under Senate Bill 1738, up to $1,000 in a person's bank account and household goods valued under $5,000. Debtors are also allowed to keep one piece of jewelry worth up to $5,000. Winner, firefighters. Among the bills passed with them in mind, Senate Bill 1446 mandates that all firefighter deaths, including service-related cancers and suicides, must be tracked and recorded by the Office of Illinois State Fire Marshal, and House Bill 2409 requires all manufacturers of turnout gear to provide written notice if their products contain the so-called forever chemicals, which have been linked to a higher rate of cancer. Loser, cyberbullies. Illinois school code now makes clear that all students who post or distribute sexually explicit images of other students are in violation of the bullying statute. The same goes for posting or distributing AI-generated digital replicas of other students without their permission. Winner, beavers and bison. The nation's first rewilding law, championed by conservationists, grants the Illinois Department of Natural Resources more power to restore land to its natural state and reintroduce native plant and animal species known for keeping ecosystems healthier. Loser. Unscrupulous towing companies, written in response to predatory towers in Chicagoland, but affecting all of Illinois. Senate Bill 2040 gives the state the power to impound unregistered tow trucks and suspend license plates tied to unpaid fines. Far too many drivers have been taken advantage of by shady tow companies that operate without oversight, move vehicles without consent, and charge outrageous fees, said bill co-sponsor Selena Villanueva, Democrat of Chicago. Winner, immigrant students. House Bill 3247 prohibited schools from excluding or discouraging students from attending school or taking part in school programs based on their own immigration status or that of their parents. Loser, school administrators overdoing it on AI. One job artificial intelligence won't replace in Illinois. Teacher, House Bill 1859 strictly prohibits schools from responding to a teacher shortage by having AI or a generative AI program leading the classes. There's more, but that's all we have for today. On the front page, Friends Corner Coffee House, Amore Sober Space, longtime Bement Bar spot reopens as a cafe by Jana Wiersma. After 8 years of bartending from open to close and nearly 5 years of running her own bar, West End pub owner Amanda Rickner was ready for a change. "My life just was not going how I wanted to, and the drinking world is wild," she said. "You know, I was just ready for calm and peacefulness and just where we can have a family environment, and the drinking world is kind of dying off. People aren't drinking like they did 10 years ago, even. So it was just kind of dying business, and I thought, I'm not going to keep sinking my money into this when I could do something that's going to make me happy." Rinker closed the pub in late October. However, rather than simply let the space sit vacant, she asked her best friend, Christy McQueen, prior to closing if she'd be willing to join her in a new venture, reopening the spot at 481 West Wilson Street as a coffee shop. "The community has loved it," Rinker said. "They are all surprised when they walk in the door because it looks like a completely new building. We carpeted the floor. We completely changed the bar and the shelves. It just looks like a whole new room. It just feels comfortable," people are saying. Rinker credited her friend Randy Lewis for helping with the renovations out of the goodness of his heart. The coffee shop's current menu includes espresso drinks, lattes, plant-based energy drinks, dirty sodas, cold brew coffee, and Italian sodas. Rinker plans to add food items in early 2026, which is also when she expects to begin offering delivery service to Bement and surrounding towns. Her goal is to create a calm, peaceful atmosphere where people can sit in a quiet corner and use the Wi-Fi or chat with friends at the bar. She's seen customers doing the latter and even sticking around for 3 or 4 coffees at a time. According to Piatt County Journal Republican, Rinker purchased the West End Pub in 2021. She said in a 2022 interview that the building dates back to the 1800s and has always been a tavern or a saloon or a bar. Some of the establishments that were once located in this space included the Junction Eating House, the Depot Tavern, and the West End Tavern. It was also once known as the Gun and Knife Club, Richter said. I wanted something that Bement would be proud of, she told the News Gazette. I ran the bar here for almost 5 years, and I don't know half the people that's been coming into the coffee shop because there's so many other people in this town, and it's just great. I get to meet the sober side of living now, the more family-oriented daytime. I love saying good morning to the people, and I love going to bed before 9 p.m. Rinker's workday starts early at Friend's Corner. The shop is currently open from 4:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. on weekdays and 5 a.m. to 2 p.m. on weekends in the hope of attracting first-shift factory workers. The MLK Committee is pleased to announce that the community-wide service for the 2026 MLK celebration will be held on Monday, January 19th at 11:30 a.m. at the St. James United Methodist Church, 504 North Vermilion Street, Danville, Illinois. The event is open to the public. The Reverend Dr. Dwight Ford will serve as a speaker for the service. Reverend Ford is currently the president and CEO of Project Now, which is a community action agency that serves low-income families and seniors in Rock Island, Henry, and Mercer counties. Also, he's the founder and pastor of Grace City Church in Rock Island, Illinois. The service will include the presentation of a $6,000 MLK scholarship to a Danville student graduating high school who plans to pursue an education in an institution of higher learning. In addition, an ensemble of singers under the direction of MLK Music Director Brett Dupree will perform at the service. No matter what we may look like on the outside, we are all the same on the inside. Therefore, we need to start embracing our differences on the outside and seeing each other as equals. Thus, the MLK Committee has chosen Equals in Humanity as the theme for the 2026 King Celebration. And that is the MLK celebration in Danville, not in Champaign County. From the U of I, high schoolers offered early taste of college. Rantoul and Leroy students are among the first to have dual credit chance by Rob Locates. Come February, both Rantoul Township and Leroy High School students will be able to take selected college courses at the University of Illinois, with neither the students nor their school districts having to spend a dime. The U of I's online learning and undergraduate admissions office has created the Dual Credit Learning Accelerator with the goal to bring popular college-level courses to high school and spark interest in certain career fields. That project, funded from the American Talent Initiative Ideas Grant, established the university's first ever dual credit initiative. Lisa Anderson, the online learning office director, said the two offices are reviewing qualified instructors at half a dozen other schools. So far, Crete Moni High School is the only other school cleared to participate. Rantoul's assistant superintendent, Megan Anderson, said these dual credit classes could provide high schoolers with a glimpse into college life at the U of I, so it's a less daunting experience later. It's such a huge university, the enrollment is so large, it's easy to be intimidated by some of those facts, when, in actuality, if you can get on campus and get to talk to people in your specific college, it's a much smaller environment, she said. I think this is a great way for kids to see that they can do it. Rantoul has chosen to participate in two of the four classes the program is offering, 10 Ways Astronomy Can Kill Your Descendants, and the History and Culture Behind the Disabilities Movement and Special Education, Megan Anderson said. And students don't have to worry about their participation having a negative effect on their college future, as they can elect for credit or no credit at the end of the semester based on whether or not they want their undergraduate GPA associated with their high school performance. Enrolled students will have access to the U of I's library system. They can travel to campus to receive the iCard or set up the virtual option from home. Rantoul Superintendent Scott Amerio said the collaboration is an opportune moment for both the students and the school staff to interact with the college. We have a world-class institution a couple of miles away, and sometimes we forget that, he said. Conversations for this program started last April for Rantoul. The school wanted to implement those classes for the 2025-26 school year, but due to enrollment timing and already set in stone schedules, it was delayed. Next academic year, the classes will be split across two semesters, each with two sections of one dual class. There's no doubt in Megan Anderson's mind about classrooms being filled. In fact, her fear is having more interest than availability. The DCLA program allows districts to appoint already established faculty members who possess advanced college degrees in those fields of study to teach the classes in person. Mike Cerise and Sarah Hafer will teach the Space and Disabilities classes at Rantoul, respectively. The U of I thought ahead for schools without qualified teachers. Those classes can be taught in a fully online format with help from credentialed teachers from the Illinois Virtual Learning Academy. Amerio said the school wanted the pilot year set up for success, and if the district finds that, adapting to online learning may be on the table. Between already established dual credit courses like English Composition 101 and 102, pre-algebra, statistics, and all the Parkland opportunities, Megan Anderson estimated around 100 seats filled by the end of next year. Having it be in person, gives us the best opportunity to do virtual learning somewhere down the road, Amerio said. Megan Anderson said she hopes that allowing Rantoul students to have success in a college course in high school could encourage the pursuit of higher education. I really just believe that any connection we can give our students is a leg up as they decide what they want to do next year, she said. It's a nice way for them to be involved peripherally with the university, and then it gives our teachers an excellent opportunity to teach something they probably didn't consider that they would be able to do. And from Ford County, Gibson City man charged with setting fire to an apartment by Will Brumlevy. As elderly Gibson City man has been arrested and charged with aggravated arson for allegedly setting fire to his apartment the day after Christmas. Ford County State's Attorney Andrew Killian filed one count of aggravated arson, a Class X felony against Roger D. Leisure, 71, who remained at the Ford County Jail on Wednesday ahead of a detainment hearing. Leisure, who listed an address at the schoolhouse apartments at 200 North Melvin Street in Gibson City, allegedly committed an arson in his apartment building on December 26, according to charging documents. The fire partially damaged the building and occurred while other elderly and disabled tenants of the building were inside, the documents noted. If convicted of the Class X felony, Leisure faces a mandatory sentence ranging from 6 to 30 years in person, up to a $25,000 fine and possible restitution. Leisure is due back in Ford County Circuit Court for a preliminary hearing on January 27th before Judge Matt Fitton. Leisure has indicated that he plans to hire private counsel according to online court records. Killian filed a petition on December 29th seeking the denial of Leisure's pretrial release. The petition noted that Leisure poses a real and present threat to the safety of others. Bruce Kalal, chief of Gibson City Fire Protection District, said firefighters from Gibson City, Sibley, and Elliott responded to a report of a fire at the schoolhouse apartments at 12:46 p.m. December 26. Upon firefighters' arrival, the building's management directed them to the second-floor apartment where the fire occurred, Kellall said, as residents were evacuating. We found heavy smoke in the apartment, Kalal said. As we worked our way in, we determined that the sprinkler system had already put the fire out, so we didn't have to use any truck water or anything. The sprinkler system did its job. Luckily, the smoke was pretty well contained to that apartment, with the fire contained in the spot of origin. That apartment and an apartment below it suffered water damage from the sprinkler going off, and there was a small amount of fire damage in the second floor apartment. Because the fire appeared questionable in nature, Kalal said, the State Fire Marshal's Office and Gibson City Police were called to investigate. The location and nature of it overall were questionable, Kalal said, declining to elaborate further. No residents, including the intendant whose apartment caught fire, were reportedly hurt. In all, an estimated 25 firefighters and 8 fire trucks responded to the scene, Kalal said. And under trade talks, Trump delays increased tariffs on upholstered furniture, kitchen cabinets, and vanities for a year. President Donald Trump signed a New Year's Eve proclamation delaying increased tariffs on upholstered furniture, kitchen cabinets, and vanities for a year, citing ongoing trade talks. Trump's order signed Wednesday keeps in place a 25% tariff he imposed in September on those goods, but delays for another year a 30% tariff on upholstered furniture and 50% tariff on kitchen cabinets and vanities. The increases, which were set to take effect Thursday, comes as the Republican president instituted a broad swath of taxes on imported goods to address trade imbalances and other issues. The president has said the tariffs on furniture are indeed needed to bolster American industry and protect national security. The delay is the latest in the roller coaster of Trump's tariff war since he returned to office last year, with the president announcing levies at times without warning and then delaying or pulling back from them just as abruptly. The Trump administration on Wednesday also signaled it may back away from a steep tariff proposed on Italian pasta that would have put the rate at 107%. The U.S. had threatened to add a heavy tariff on Italian pasta makers after the U.S. Commerce Department launched what it said was a routine anti-dumping review based on allegations that pasta makers sold product into the U.S. at below market prices and undercut local competitors. A final decision on the sanctions was scheduled for today with the option of extending it. The Commerce Department said Wednesday that based on a new review, the rates would be lowered to between 2.26% and 13.89% for the pasta makers because they had addressed many of the department's concerns. A final decision is now set for March 12th. And some notes for history. Area history. In 2011, a champagne company has won $10,000 as a runner-up in the statewide Innovate Illinois competition. Diagnostic Photonics was named runner-up in the early stage category. The company is developing high-resolution imaging technology for use in surgery. P. Scott Carney, the company's chief scientific officer, said this technology could reduce the need for follow-up surgery in breast cancer cases. The International History Today's headline. On January 2, 2016, a heavily armed group led by brothers Ammon and Ryan Bundy seized the Malheurs National Wildlife Refuge in Oregon, beginning a 41-day standoff to protest the imprisonment of two ranchers convicted of setting fires on public land and to demand the federal government turn over public lands to local control. On this date in 1890, President Benjamin Harrison appointed Alice Sanger as the first female White House staffer at a time of a growing movement for women's rights. In 1942, the Philippine capital of Manila was captured by Japanese forces during World War II. In 1959, the Soviet spacecraft Luna 1 launched, becoming the first spacecraft to escape Earth's gravity. And in 1971, 66 people were killed in a crush of spectators leaving a soccer match at Ibrox Stadium in Glasgow, Scotland. In 1974, President Richard Nixon signed legislation requiring states to limit highway speeds to 55 miles an hour as a way of conserving gasoline during an OPEC oil embargo. The 55-mile-per-hour limit was effectively phased out in 1987. Federal speed limits were abolished in 1995. In 1981, British serial killer Peter Sutcliffe, aka known as the Yorkshire Ripper, was captured after a series of killings bred fear across northwest England between 1975 and 1980. Subsequently convicted and sentenced to life in prison for the killings of 13 women, he died in 2020 at the age of 74. In 2023, Buffalo Bills safety Damar Hamlin suffered cardiac arrest after making a tackle during the first quarter of an NFL game against the Cincinnati Bengals, requiring life-saving treatment on the field. The game was canceled. Hamlin would recover fully and return to play the following season. In 2024, Harvard University President Claudine Gay resigned amid plagiarism accusations and a backlash over her congressional testimony about anti-Semitism on campus. She was the Ivy League institution's first Black president. Under Top of the Morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of staff writer Luke Taylor. Says, on Fridays, we'll spotlight the men and women serving up cold ones and conversation in our neck of the woods. Let us know about your favorite bartender. When Bobby Jo Schultz asked for a sign, she found Robin's Bar in Tilton. Over 7 years later, she's still there. Schultz said she was in the area for a funeral, a brief visit home from where she'd been living for a few years in Florida. During the visit, she said that if she found a job in the next 2 days, it was a sign to stay. It's just like family, Schultz said. All the regulars whom I call my family are just friends, really, that I wouldn't have known if I hadn't worked there. She said Robin's is the place to go for welcoming, friendly vibes. You might call it a dive bar, she said, but it's clean and open, even though holidays, with a grill out front where she was cooking up cheeseburgers even on Christmas. She always goes for Jaeger bombs and ice water, but her favorite drink to mix up is a Bahama Mama, because the people who order it are her favorite, too. Cities around the world welcome 2026 with thunderous fireworks and heightened security by Ted Shaffrey and Hallie Golden. From Sydney to Paris to New York City, crowds rang in the new year with exuberant celebrations filled with thunderous fireworks or light shows, while others took a more subdued approach. As the clock struck midnight in Japan, temple bells rang, and some climbed mountains to see the year's first sunrise, while a light show with somersaulting jet skis twinkled in Dubai. The countdown to 2026 was projected onto the Arc de Triomphe in Paris, while in Moscow, people celebrated in the snow. In New York City Times Square, revelers braved frigid temperatures to celebrate with a famed New Year's Eve ball drop. In Rio de Janeiro, crowds packed more than 21.5 miles of the city's Copacabana beach for concerts and a 12-minute fireworks show, despite high tides and large waves that rocked barges carrying the fireworks. Other events were more subdued. Hong Kong held limited celebrations following a recent fire in an apartment complex that killed 161 people. Australia saluted the New Year with defiance less than a month after its worst mass shooting in almost 30 years. There was disaster in the Swiss resort town of Crans-Montana, where a fire at a bar in the early hours of the New Year was presumed to have killed dozens of people. Ball drop in New York City. Crowds bundled up against the chilly temperatures cheered and embraced as the New Year's Eve ball, covered in more than 5,000 crystals, descended down a pole and confetti fell in Times Square. Revelers wearing tall celebratory hats and light-up necklaces had waited for hours to see the 12,350-pound ball drop. The festivities also included Tones and I performing John Lennon's Imagine just before midnight. The television hosts interviewed visitors who were attending from such places as Florida, Mexico, and South Korea, and read people's wishes for the new year. A sixth grader from Dallas told one of the hosts that he wants to get good grades in 2026 and have a better year. Police in the city planned additional anti-terrorism measures at the ball drop with mobile screening teams. It was not in response to a specific threat, according to the NYPD Commissioner Jessica Tisch. Moments after the ball dropped, it rose again, sparkling in red, white, and blue, to mark the country's upcoming 250th birthday. A few miles away, in a decommissioned subway station, Zoran Mandami was sworn in as mayor during a private event just after midnight Thursday. More security in Sydney. A heavy police presence monitored crowds watching fireworks in Sydney. Many officers openly carried rapid-fire rifles, a first for the event, after two gunmen targeted a Hanukkah celebration at Bondi Beach on December 14th, killing 15. An hour before midnight, victims were commemorated with a minute of silence, and the crowd was invited to show solidarity with Australia's Jewish community. New South Wales Premier Chris Minns had urged residents not to stay away from the festivities, saying extremists would interpret smaller crowds as a victory. "We have to show defiance in the face of this terrible crime. Shadows of war and disasters." Indonesia scaled back festivities in solidarity with communities devastated by floods and the landslides in parts of Sumatra a month ago that killed over 1,100. Fireworks on the Turkish island of Bali were replaced with traditional dances. Hong Kong rang in 2026 without fireworks over Victoria Harbor after a massive fire in November. Facades of landmarks were turned into countdown clocks and a light show at midnight. And in Gaza, Palestinians said they hope the new year brings an end to the conflict between Israel and Hamas. "The war humiliated," said Minervat Abed al, displaced from the southern city of Raja. Now, a few obits. Janice Elizabeth Barber, 60, of Danville, died Friday, November 26th at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center in Danville. Visitation will be from 11 a.m. to noon Saturday at Leek & Sons Funeral Home, 304 East Williams Street in Danville. A home-going celebration will be at noon Saturday at the funeral home with Pastor Franklin Bourne as eulogist. Joseph Bednar. Joseph A. Bednar, 57, of Westville, died Tuesday at home. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Roorveld Funeral Services and Crematory in Tilton. Judy Berg, Crystal Dyke. Judith Ann Meek Berg died at Christ on Tuesday, December 23rd, in Barrington. There are nothing here. Richard Berkey, Hoopston. Richard D. Berkey, 86, of Hoopston, died Monday, December 29th at Heritage Health Therapy and Senior Care in Hoopston. Visitation will be from 9:30 to 11 a.m. Tuesday at the Anderson Funeral Home, 4027 East Main Street, Hoopston, followed by funeral services at 11 a.m. Burial will be in the East Bend Cemetery, 702 County Road, 3300 North in Fisher. And that's all we have time for today in Part 1. Stay tuned.